Welcome to Sick Burns, where two Gen X friends, a corporate PR pro, and a college English professor deliver choice critique on 80s songs. I'm Margaret.
And I'm Elizabeth. Let's get into it today.
Hey, Margaret.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, I'm going to say. Although my son told me yesterday I seemed depressed and tired.
Thanks, hubby.
Yeah, it was solicited because I said a friend of mine remarked that I seemed down. And I asked my family if I did. And my son said, yeah, now that you mention it. So that'll teach me.
Did he actually say, now that you mention it?
Yes.
Wow.
Now that you mention it, you seem depressed and tired.
That's, what'd you say to that?
I said, oh, okay. Maybe I am. I don't know. Thank you for telling me.
As the days are shorter, the nights are longer, everybody gets a little blue, I think.
I think that's right. And of course, like the older you get, the faster those cycles seem. And so that doesn't exactly help.
And it's just kind of like a melancholy, I don't know. I think people feel wistful this time of year and they get nostalgic and I don't know.
Hundo P. As the kids say. And also, I will add, here in Buffalo, after the time change, we don't yet have snow. And snow at least provides a glare. But with no snow, it's just dark. And it's dark at 4. And it's like 40 degrees. So there's not even any like strong feelings you can have about weather.
Cozy it is to watch the snowfall or whatnot.
Yeah, right. It's just dark and nothing.
Yeah, it brings to mind that song by Guns N' Roses, November Rain, which is just about...
It very much does, which I got made fun of for singing.
Oh, did you sing that around yourself?
Yes, but it was more
is
my...
Is that why he said you sounded depressed?
Maybe a little bit, but that mockery was from my spouse because I sounded like Katharine Hepburn. My Axl Rose imitation sounds like Katharine Hepburn, but much more specifically, it sounds like Martin Short's impression of Katharine Hepburn from Saturday Night Live. Do you remember that?
I sure do.
He'd go, and I pour myself a bowl of bran. That was like the line that when I was however old, 13, 14, man, I lived for it.
God, he's so funny. Listen, so have you funny. Watched Only Murders in the Building?
Heck yes.
I feel like that TV show was 100% written and produced to delight me.
Hundo P.
I know that that's not the case. I'm sure that people all over the world liked it. But I am, as you know, a big Steve Martin fan. You know, too. You are as well.
My God. Do I have a heart beating in my chest?
He's on my top five list, like my laminated Friends style top five list. He's such a renaissance man. I just think he's fantastic at everything he does.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, hopefully you'll be able to lift your spirits with some eggnog or something.
I do like eggnog. I like mint and chocolate. I like the advent of that flavor combination in
Me
our world.
Too.
In fact, the Trader Joe's holiday treats are being rolled out, and I got some mint chocolate cookies there.
Just at the store today, I bought like a limited edition bag of Starbucks peppermint mocha coffee, like ground coffee beans, not like a mix with some hot cocoa or something in it. Mm-hmm. Very excited to try it because I too love the mint and the peppermint and chocolate or coffee flavors.
Listen, it wouldn't be a podcast without our mentioning Starbucks. And I'm excited this year to try my first peppermint mocha.
You've never had one?
No.
Have we ever discussed this before?
I think we did on this exact date, on this exact podcast, 365 days ago.
I'm very pleased because I got my daughter hooked on them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it matters to me so much that my kids like coffee. Like, I probably should be pushing them away from it. But it's like a family moment that we have when we drink coffee. Like, my grandmother passed it down to my mother and my mother passed it to me. And now I want to bequeath the love of coffee to my children. It's like a good gateway because it's mostly hot chocolate.
I was going to say it's hardly coffee per se.
Right. Uh-huh. It's got a little caffeine, a little shot of coffee. I got her started on the peppermint mochas in a hot cocoa, basically. And she told me recently that she's been drinking coffee at work because she works in a restaurant. And when it's like a long slog on a Saturday night, she makes some coffee and drinks it. And I was like, really? Boy, you got quite a path from peppermint mocha to like coffee at your restaurant. They're not known at for night, coffee yeah. at this restaurant. Yeah, at yeah. night. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yep. She makes it for all the guys who work in the kitchen. She makes some for herself and she passes out the little cups and they all have a coffee party back there.
Yeah. Caffeine is a potent and seductive drug.
It really adds a richness to the fabric of my life. So right. I'm grateful for it in all its forms. You know, I like a good cup of tea too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Totally. I just got some PG tips for the first time. Very delicious.
My favorite brand of tea. That's
I can see why.
My preferred cup. Yeah, I love it.
I'd never tried it before.
It's a fantastic blend.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of my other favorite drinks at Starbucks is the London Fog Latte. Have you ever had that?
Can I just make a quick plug? Our local Starbucks employees are rallying to unionize and be the first Starbucks employees in the United States to unionize. And
at the one near your house or the Buffalo area Starbucks?
Buffalo area. There's like 3 stores total. I do not believe the one near my house is included. And in fact, I chitty chat with a neighbor who works at it. She does not support it. But mystifying to me why people don't support
unions.
But whatever. So the other ones, and it's just so stupidly obvious. Starbucks corporate has been sending big wigs here to like, as if like it's just part of their standard operating procedure, but it's so obvious it's meant to like intimidate people. And
right. We always do market visits to Buffalo in November.
Right. Exactly. Just all of us.
We do.
All of us. That's like where we devote our resources. Yeah. Anyway, so go Starbucks. Union up.
Yeah, it is funny too that they're the ones leading it because there's probably worse places to work. Did you see the story about the Wendy's employees who all walked out, like all 14 of them walked out?
No, where?
Gosh, somewhere out west, Arizona or Colorado or something. I'm probably getting that wrong, but it is clearly like a franchise owned Wendy's. Most Wendy's restaurants are franchise owned. This guy, like his general manager, like he didn't have a general manager at the store, like she quit or was fired or something. And so he was sort of running the show single-handedly for 6 weeks or something and working these crazy hours because he was like the only assistant manager there and opening the store, closing the store, working 7 days a week, just not getting any time off at all, was exhausted. And he was like, I need help. He was telling his bosses, somebody's got to help. I can't keep doing this. And he just didn't get any help. So one day he was like, guys, I'm quitting. I'm done. I'm leaving. And they were all like, we're coming with you. And so they all quit.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, the other side of the coin. If you don't want to unionize, you can quit.
Mm-hmm.
However, in one scenario, you have a job with some guarantees. And in the other scenario, you don't. So,
right.
Maybe more power in banding together. But John Oliver just did an episode on union busting that I want to watch. It's in my queue.
Yeah. Starbucks, I think, has gotten real good at it. And I think it was one of the leaders, like in the 90s, especially in having really attractive, like, employment incentives and benefits. Yep. Yeah. In fact, I even worked at a Starbucks. I was a barista for a few months in Chicago. Yeah. There were some very pleasant aspects of that job. But someone explained to me or I read or something that like part of the reason for the benefits was to prevent unionization. And Whole Foods was similarly had really great benefits for people. I worked at a Whole Foods for a bit in the 90s also, come to think of it.
Really?
So maybe that's why I was aware of those corporations.
Huh. Mm-hmm. What did you do at Whole Foods?
There was a Whole Foods run restaurant and I waited tables there, but I also handed out samples in the grocery store. that was a real eye-opening situation for good old me, because people were real. That was like my first introduction to like real strict like dietary management for lots of different reasons that were not just like plain I was familiar with just plain allergies. Yeah. But people, like I would be sampling, they called it a granita, which was basically like a slushy, but mm-hmm. since it was Whole Foods, they had to call it granita. Sure. And people would be like, is there like GMO rice in that? They would be asking like every little.
Even in the 90s?
Yes, because it was a real rich area in a big city, you know, so it was like at the leading edge of that kind of.
Got it.
And I served a sample granita to James Iha of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, is that his name? That sounds right. I know. Mm-hmm. I can see his face when you say his name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I also, and I think other celebrities too, that's the one I remember, but one woman came and she was like a very tall and very large woman. And she was dressed dramatically to my eye in all white, like draped in white like robes and scarves and shawls, and had sort of like a white turban type of thing on, and it was striking, and I felt like calling attention to itself, and so I once again was like kind of a, we'll call it naive, N-A-I-F, uh-huh. you know, and maybe like a unschooled in the ways of the city sophistication. And I said something about like, oh, I guess today was like all white day or some, you know, I made like some joke.
Uh-huh.
And she looked at me and very meanly said, I dress religiously. Like it was, she was dressed because of her religion. And I felt really like stupid. But I also was like looking for the Groucho Marx joke in there too, like, yeah, lady, I dress religiously too, like as if
what religion requires that sort of dressing, do you think?
I have no idea. I was
the Moonies.
You said it.
Is that a thing still?
I don't know if the Moonies are a thing anymore. I don't know if they are. Maybe she was part of that the cult from, they didn't dress unusually though, the one that's Wild Wild Kingdom or Wild Wild.
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Country. Wild Wild Country.
I thought you were going to say it was someone famous, and it was reminding me of a time I was in a mall in Boston and I saw Mary from Peter, Paul, and Mary, because she is very striking.
I would not know what her face looks. She's tall. Oh, but she's quite tall, isn't she?
Yeah. She's tall. Mm-hmm. You know, with very blonde, straight, blunt cut hair and bangs. And she was wearing like a full length fur coat and real big, like moon boots made out of furry stuff, too.
That's and you could a not dramatic miss her. Appearance. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes. I was like, that woman is someone. And then I realized, oh, it's Mary from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Because you actually like recognize her?
I know her face. Yeah. My parents were big Peter, Paul, and Mary fans.
Yeah.
Watched a lot of them on PBS when I was young.
Yeah,
so I know her face.
Yeah, I just want to contribute one more thing to the celebrity spotting thing, and that is at another restaurant I worked at in Chicago. A friend of mine, it was like a kind of a dead time, like 3 or 3:30 or something, and a friend of mine was waiting on, like 50-ish, maybe 55-year-old guy, handsome. Like kind of hippie, long hair, tight jeans, a chambray shirt, cheekbones. And I was like, God, and he kind of sauntered, maybe you would say, or mm-hmm. or strutted. Mm-hmm. And I said to my friend, who does this guy think he is? Robert Plant. And she goes, I think that's exactly who he thinks he is, because I think that is who it is. And we all freaked out and like, looked at him from a few different angles and determined, in fact, it was Robert Plant. And then we all just like that restaurant got a lot of celebrities in. And so we were used to seeing David Schwimmer and Jerry Springer and Oprah's Stedman came, never Oprah herself, but Chicago area people.
Right, right.
And even sometimes like performers who were playing at different venues there. But like Robert Plant was.
That's
huge.
I think as big a deal as you
100%.
So reclusive, really. So it's not like you see him on TMZ walking down into the routes in Beverly Hills or whatever. Like,
and I've got to say, he still had it then.
Because of the saunter.
Well, and the jeans, you know, it's not like he doesn't know what people like to look at.
Excellent use of
the double negative there.
Did I ever tell you about the time I ate lunch at a little local Italian chain here in Columbus, and I saw Eric Clapton at the table next to me?
What?
In the suburbs of Columbus, Ohio.
Actual Eric Clapton?
Actual Eric Clapton. I was looking at him. I was at lunch with a friend, and I was like staring over her shoulder at this man, and I was like, how do I know that guy? How do I know him? And there's that thing you get of like, I know I don't know him. He is a person who is famous. I just recognize him. Who is he? But it was so out of the place. He was there. And then it hit me and I was like, holy shit, it's Eric Clapton. And she was like, immediately turned around. And I was like, be cool.
Yeah.
Turn around.
Although he's like a racist piece of shit, though. No?
As it turns out.
Yeah.
Yes, it's recently come to our attention.
Yeah. But what the heck was he doing there?
I mean, we had our clues. He stole George Harrison's wife.
Oh, right.
And told us about it in a song. Like, we know. Yeah. Anyway, he married a woman. His current wife is from Columbus. She went to my daughter's high school, actually.
Sure.
And she was a makeup artist, and they met and married and have kids. And so they have a house here.
So, in Columbus, Ohio.
In Columbus, Ohio. Yes. Yes. This is good cocktail party talk. I love the, what famous people have you seen? When you work in a restaurant in a big city, you get a lot of stories like that.
Big time. Yes. Robert Plant came in a few more times that week. So like the third or fourth time he came in, we were like, Jesus, is a Robert Plant again? Like it was getting boring to see.
Get a life, Robert Plant.
Exactly. And we wanted to joke with him about pretending he was Robert Palmer. We thought that would be funny.
Here's your rice bowl, Mr. Palmer.
Exactly.
A big fan of Addicted to Love.
Addicted to Love, huh? You know, make some jokes like that. No one had the guts to do it.
No. Did you have any notes or you want me to get into the content for today?
Oh, I'd like to hear about the song.
We have a good one today.
Yeah.
By request. This one's by request.
Is it Benji?
Yes. Benji at Ghost Label, who edits our show.
This is a great request.
It's such a good one. I hadn't thought about this song in a long time, so I was glad to be able to dig into it. It is The Safety Dance by Men Without Hats, requested by Benji. Do you know much about this song? Or when you hear it, what's in your mind's eye?
Dancing.
Yes. Kind of dancing?
Safety and dancing. Is there a spelling out the letters of safety with the body? Is that a thing?
Yes, they spell the letter S. The safety dance is you make an S with your left arm over your head, curled in a sort of a C shape, and then your right arm pointing the opposite direction, held beneath your abdomen. Mm-hmm. S. And then they do spell it out.
Do you spell out A with your body?
No, you don't.
F.
No, you're getting it. You know, you got a little mental overlap there with YMCA.
Yeah.
Just the S.
Got it.
Just the S.
Because that's the safest letter to,
I guess. It's hard
perform.
To yeah. But they do spell it out in the song. They say S-A-F-E-T-Y.
Yeah. So that's my association. And also, I like it.
It's a really good, catchy song. It's kind of a touchstone for Generation X, I think, mostly because it was played so much on MTV. Mm-hmm. And those of us who were lucky enough to have MTV saw it all the time. Let me tell you a little bit about it. So it's by Men Without Hats, which is a new wave synth pop band from Canada.
Mm.
The song was released in 1982, and it was written by the lead singer, whose name is Ivan Doroshuk. And Men Without Hats started in the late 70s in Montreal as a Cramps cover band, which is interesting. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And then in like the early 80s, they changed over to sort of be like techno pop, and then included a bunch of other people, including his two brothers, Stefan and Colin. And that's when they got into new wave. And that's when he wrote Safety Dance. He was inspired to write it because he had gone to, he was, you know, going to clubs, punk clubs, new wave clubs, dancing. And he had gotten kicked out of a club in Ottawa for pogo dancing.
That's the direct vertical up and down.
Yes, it is. I didn't even really know it was called this, although we certainly did a lot of this dancing in our youth. You just jump up and down, either remaining on the spot or moving around, and it looks like you're on a pogo stick. You kind of keep your torso stiff, like you put your arms down at your sides and you just kind of bounce back and forth, legs close together. And it's sort of like precursor to mosh pit or slam dancing or something like that, because sometimes in pogo dancing, you bounce into each other. The bouncer was telling him to stop, was telling the guys to stop doing this dancing because it's not safe or whatever, hence safety dance. And it was really like this anti-establishment song, like, you can't tell us what to do. We can dance if we want to. The interesting thing to me is when you're young and you have all those feelings of like, you can't tell me what to do, mister. And then you grow up and you're like, things can really get out of hand.
Yeah.
Let's just take a minute and calm it down here. I went to a mother-son dance at my son's high school.
Oh, like Mother Boy? Arrested Development? Did you see that when they went to Mother Boy? Okay. No. Well, that's another conversation.
But maybe it's very similar. So it was like all the boys took their moms to this dance, and it was called Mom Prom. And it was usually like the weekend of prom. The idea is like, here's how you behave like a nice young man at a dance, and your mother. It was
OMG.
But it was fun because you got to dance with your son and his friends, and they were goofy and fun, and there was always a big conga line, and it was nice. And the boys would, so they'd play like a song for the moms, like, for example, Safety Dance or something, and the moms would all get out there and boogie and show their sons their moves or whatever. And then they'd play like a current song. And the moms would naturally, there'd be this attrition, they'd leave the dance floor, and the boys, because they knew what the hell the song was, they'd keep dancing. And then you'd see like just craziness begin to develop, and they would start pogoing, pushing into each other and pushing around and just going insane. And it would take like 30 seconds. And then the principal, this tall dude, would come out and go, all right, he had like a secret signal with the DJ, who would then like cut the music and put on a song that mom would like to bring the moms back out. But you could see that the energy just shift, and these boys just start to kind of go nuts.
Like when they're like, when they have a space to themselves, like 17-year-old males will
just
amplify each other,
and they just start bouncing up and down as a group, like as a sea of boys. And then there would be people like put on hands and crowd surfing. It just got out of hand so quickly, and you'd stand there and watch like, oh my god, the crowd dynamics here are kind of insane while all of your mothers are standing here But it took the principal being like, all right, let's just all calm down being the like the bouncer in this song. From
I would like to hear various explanations for that phenomenon, you know, like anthropological, hormonal.
There must be, right? It's
developmental.
That bit of crowd mentality, but also like a little bit of showing off for each other and just like kind of natural
amplification,
aggression.
Like escalation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. The escalation was like instantaneous. Just not. But when you're the person doing the dancing, the last thing you want is for someone to tell you to stop dancing, because you're like, I'm just dancing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, somebody can get their head cracked open.
Yeah, for real.
So that's what the song is about. Plenty of people tried to interpret the lyrics in the 80s and 90s before the internet, and you wondered what songs were about. In the 90s, people thought it was about safe sex. You know, with the rise of HIV.
I think I might have thought that.
Some people thought it was an anti-nuclear protest song. because there's a little bit of nuclear imagery at the very end of the video.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And he didn't really refute that. Ivan Doroshuk said it's not just like just being anti-nuclear. It was also a question of being anti-establishment.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, like, it's a protest song. It did really well. It was, you know, like a top 20 hit in 14 different countries or something like that. It got nominated for Juno Awards in Canada, which is a big deal. It was released in March in the US, but it didn't actually chart for a few months. And it was obviously helped along by MTV. It was really big in England and South Africa and Australia. Let's take a listen real quick.
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. Because your friends don't dance. And if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. See?
You can dance if you want to. You can leave your friends behind. Because your friends don't dance. And if they don't dance, they know. Oh, friends, did you mean listen to the actual recording?
No, I wanted to hear you perform it. Yeah. Do you have a mental image of the video? Have you
Not
seen the video?
All. No.
Oh, my gosh. The video is so weird and great.
Uh-huh.
When I explain it to you, it's going to come back. I promise you. The video was directed by this guy named Tim Pope, who also directed a bunch of videos for The Cure and other bands, sort of based in British folk revival style. So it kind of looks like the Pied Piper. So the video starts.
And like the lead singer, folk revival, like.
Not Peter, Paul, and Mary folk revival.
No, no, no. But like British, like. Like
Renfair.
Yeah. Yes. That's what I'm picturing.
Yeah.
And like Wicker Man.
Yes. It is all the things.
Uh-huh.
It's got Morris dancers. It's got Mummers. It's got Punch and Judy
shows.
My. It's got a maypole.
Uh-huh.
It's got all
I kind of do remember this. Yes.
And he's like walking through this flowing field of barley and he sees a little town in the distance and he has a little person with him, a dwarf, they were called when this video came out.
Uh-huh.
And he's dressed as a jester.
Uh-huh.
And Ivan Doroshuk is dressed as, you know, just an old timey British dude with the puffy shirt and the, you know.
Brave Sir Robin, like Brave Sir Robin, maybe?
Precisely, yes.
Uh-huh.
And a vest. And they're walking through these flowing fields of, I think, barley. And they walk into this town and they meet a young maid and she sort of follows along with them. And then there's all these people dancing. They're just following around in the town and the children are going around the maypole and there's people dancing and all of this stuff. And it was filmed in Wiltshire, England, near, oh my God, I'm blanking on the name of
Kmart.
No,
the Beatles.
It doesn't matter, but
okay.
I feel like I need to look it up now. It's in the Cotswolds. It's
uh-huh.
near the Cotswolds, which is where they filmed Bridget Jones's little hometown. Do you remember when Bridget Jones goes to the turkey curry buffet at her mother's house? No. Okay. It's very picturesque, a little market town.
I think I've visited the Cotswolds and I think I do remember that about it.
You and I went to Bath. And
that's
Bath
what I'm
saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I spent a semester in Bath also.
Yeah, there you go.
Got it.
So
okay.
It's,
yes.
Picture that kind of little town.
Got it.
People are all dancing around and there are Morris dancers in this video. Do you know what a Morris dancing is?
Please tell me.
It's an English folk dance and it's based on rhythmic stepping and the execution of, you know, choreography by a group of dancers. And they usually wear these little pads on their shins that have bells on them.
Uh-huh.
And so when they dance around, they like clap or slap their legs or they have like swords or handkerchiefs. And
I was picturing this, but you're describing it vividly, more vividly than I could have.
And there's tons of different kinds of Morris dances.
Mm-hmm.
In Wales, it's clogging. And mm-hmm. you may remember from the sausage company I used to work at, we had a festival, a big sausage festival on a farm every year. And it was based in this part of Ohio where there are a lot of Welsh immigrants who've been there for a couple decades.
Uh-huh.
And there would be a big clogging exhibition every year. because all the Welsh people, this is like their national dance, and that's essentially Morris dancing.
Yeah, I see. So that's Maypoles, interesting.
It's all the same kind of the same kind of thing. Or if you picture German dancing, like the scene in European Vacation where Chevy Chase puts on the little dirndl or whatever, and they're slapping their hips and their feet, and it's all this kind of folk dancing. Fun fact, a Morris team is called a jingle. So cute.
That is cute.
Yeah. Interestingly, there are a couple notable people in the video. The actor, the little person actor, is an actor by the name of Mike Edmonds. He's dressed as a jester, but he's wearing a t-shirt that has the album cover that the song is from. And he has been in tons of movies. Flash Gordon, The Dark Crystal. He played Stretch in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He was in the Terry Gilliam film Time Bandits, which is like I read that and I was like, oh, I haven't watched that in forever. I need to watch that. He's in Return of the Jedi. He plays an Ewok. He also operated Jabba the Hutt's tail.
Somebody had to do it, I guess.
And what do actors who are in all those kinds of fantasy movies when you weren't move into the 2000s, what do they star in?
Lord of the Rings.
Harry Potter.
Oh, and Harry Potter.
He played a goblin in two Harry Potter movies.
Yeah. Nice.
So what a career Mike Edmonds has had. And, right, the young blonde-haired woman by the name of Jenny. I love that she has no speaking lines. She does not sing on the track, but in the video, she says the little part. He says, we can dance. And then she goes, and sing.
You know, yes, I know that.
So I love that they gave her character a name. Her name is Jenny.
That's a good 80s name.
Yeah, totally. I think we know we, between us, have at least five friends named Jenny.
Dozens.
And her name is Louise Court. She's a journalist, and she was later editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan UK.
Wow.
These people went on to do amazing things, is my point.
Right. It was like a little incubator of talent and opportunity.
The creativity around the Maypole was unparalleled.
Yes.
If you want to stir up some creative shit, just dance around a Maypole. That's my advice to the kids today. Speaking of kids today, a lot of kids know this song now because it's been in a bunch of TV and videos and things. It's in a bunch of movies too. Crazy Frog did a version of Safety Dance in 2009. Do you know who Crazy Frog is?
No.
Your son hasn't gotten into Crazy Frog?
No. I don't know any of the things you're mentioning today.
Should I just make up some stuff?
I feel like you are. Like I'm in the joke is being played on me.
Well,
who's Crazy Frog?
Crazy Frog is, now I did not look this up, but let me tell you what my understanding is. Crazy Frog started as like a meme or a YouTube channel of a little frog who rode a motorcycle and sang like a version of some popular song.
Yes, I'm looking at,
amped
up. Bernice brought me some information.
Okay. And Crazy Frog is like a YouTube channel now with millions and millions of subscribers. And they did a version of this song. So that's how a lot of kids know the song. But also Glee did a version of this song.
Acapella.
Yep. Did you ever used to watch Glee?
I did the first season and I think that was it.
Well, this was an episode on the first season. Artie, the character who's in a wheelchair in the show. Kind of nerdy boy, that sweet nerdy boy, has like a fantasy where he can dance and he's in a mall and they do like a flash mob song to this and he's like dancing.
Oh, that's cool.
Safety dance. There's a Lipton iced tea commercial starring Hugh Jackman that plays this song.
Boop, 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 boop.
I don't know what it has to do with iced tea or Hugh Jackman, but I bet he makes it work.
Yeah, sure.
It was in South Park, Family Guy, and Alaskan Airlines used it in a commercial about COVID precautions.
Oh, nice.
And not to be forgotten, Weird Al Yankovic did a parody of this
song. Oh, what's his?
It's called The Brady Bunch. And he basically sings the lyrics to the theme song of the Brady Bunch to this tune. But he's like, you can watch Barney Miller. You can watch. He's like just naming song, you know, TV shows from the 80s or whatever. But please don't put on the Brady Bunch is what he says. This is a story of a woman who had three lovely girls.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I have so many things to say.
He's playing on me.
I can be silent no longer. Number one, I love that. And that's like the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald lyrics fitting Rocky Raccoon. Have you ever heard this or no? Do you know this?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that song.
What is it? Okay. Her name was McGill, but she called herself Lil. And oh, no, it's the opposite. It's Rocky Raccoon into the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And everyone knew her as Nancy. Like that.
This is the greatest.
So it goes on and on. Yes. And so you
and
can,
it all works perfectly.
It all works. I'm pretty sure. Yes. I haven't tested it from beginning to end. So you'll have to do that and report back. But that is the legend. And what little I have tested absolutely works.
Checks out. Okay.
Yeah. Only to find Gideon's Bible. Like that.
I know what I'm doing tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Two great songs brought together. So that's what you reminded me of. But just going back a little, I was wondering if the song's tempo was part of it. So I feel like it's mock. Your story is that it's like mocking people who say you need to be safe dancing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so did they. And if these guys started off like punk, like maybe the kind of slower tempo of the song was part of the mockery in a way, like
maybe
it'll just be this like methodical. Yeah, because it never really speeds up and it's just at this like moderate pace. And so I wonder if that was like kind of part of the mockery a little bit.
Maybe.
Hmm.
You can safely dance to this song.
I've tried it and successfully done it. I totally agree. But I also want to go back to the picture, the vivid picture of the mother boy dance that you went to and say, like, maybe that's why I have some weird, like, alt-right associations with pogo dancing, because maybe there's like some like mass. I'm not saying like people who, but I do think some of that punk stuff like turned into alt-right stuff like down the road, you know.
Well, you know,
some of the
anger
aesthetics
has to find a way to channel itself.
Yeah. And also that like young, masculine, unconstrained energy could somebody could get hurt for sure. But it also feels like that's where some of that alt-righty, like I'm thinking of Proud Boys and their Yeah, and like the aesthetic that's associated with it a little bit. And
like
also
super
because
aggro and
yes,
fuming.
Yes, and also the crowd mentality of January 6th, too, yes. You know, and because you saw a little bit of that emerging and the principal knew to expect it and was there to like
had the signal with the DJ.
Yeah, so even though like the political content is different, like I'm just talking about like the crowd energy and the wildfire nature of it, kind
of. Yes, completely like a fire. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was so good at crowd control. He knew exactly when to cue because You Loved Me by Celine Dion. And that just was a salve on the mood of the crowd.
Yeah.
And the way that people like can be stirred to emotion through music.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of crazy when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
Music is a very powerful thing, and it is interesting that this song is kind of meta like that.
Right.
That it's like a song about dancing to a song.
Right.
Oh.
But I'm picturing, I don't know if I've ever been in a dancing crowd when that song played, although maybe, like as likely as not, like in a club or something, maybe. I don't think I ever saw them like in concert, but it wouldn't like really fire people up. It would be like a calming song in a
because
in a crowded club. So, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Although, have you ever been to concerts where there are mosh pits and stuff?
Yeah. As a young person, I was. Yeah.
People like seek that out because they want to like, it makes them feel alive, you know?
Yeah, for sure. God, you're making me think of the trampling
the
and
Scott. Yeah. World. Yeah, for sure.
And the people who I heard on the radio, whatever, it was just NPR, like, who are experts in crowd control, had interesting things to say about, like, you can't just cut the mic. Like, I guess some people were like, why didn't they cut the mic and
stop the concert? Yeah.
Yes. And he was saying, well, that could make it work. Like, when something unexpected happens,
then the crowd turns on you and is like, get the show back on track. Yeah.
Yes. I was in a crowd recently. It was pre-pandemic. It was an outdoor Beck concert.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the summer. And so probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And there was a thunderstorm approaching, and Beck announced he was maybe 3 songs in, like really just getting going. And he said, there's a thunderstorm in the area. And so we're getting the warning that we're probably going to have to close down. And everybody was like, boo. And I mean, these were all like 40 and 50 year olds because it was Beck, you know?
Right.
And everyone was like, boo, boo. Like, it felt potentially scary, you know, like in a crowd thing.
A middle-aged
crowd. And then lightning came and like a clap of thunder, and everyone like screamed and started running, like because they're like, yeah, fucking dummies, it's a thunderstorm, that's what he just said, you know. And it was like after they had booed, and so
what do we want, music, when do we want it,
and I think, you know, when the lightning came, like Beck was like Audi, you know, and like ran, you know, under, and everyone finally took it seriously. But the point is, it was like a gentle glimpse of like what could happen when crowds all of a sudden decide they're just organisms unto themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And those poor kids in Houston, and the people, and the crowd control like analysts, those kids are just like victims of that organism, you know?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. What was the first one where this happened? Was it the Altamont with the Rolling Stones and the, I guess it was the biker gang that was
the Hell's Angels.
Hell's Angels. Oh, I'm thinking of the Who concert in Cincinnati.
You are. They were talking about that that was in like maybe 1979 or something like that.
Yeah.
Because I think that the Hell's Angels and Rolling Stones, there's a really such a great documentary about that. I'm going to have to look up the name of it. I think that was a shooting. I don't think that was a crowd trampling.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. But the Who concert.
But it was the Who where people got trampled. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also remember in the 80s, there was the big, at the soccer stadium, the football stadium in England. Maybe Northern England somewhere. There was the crowd pressed against a fence and many people died. I can't remember the name of the town now, but it was like a major event in the 80s.
Can I just say the Altamont was, well, this is like you not remembering Bruce Springsteen's autobiography name because the name of the film is Gimme Shelter. But it was several different deaths. There was someone got stabbed. Someone was tripping on LSD and drowned. There was a hit and run car accident. But
hired the Hells
Angels
to do
Hells
the
Angels were security. Right. Exactly. Right. Yes.
Maybe not licensed and bonded.
Yeah, in retrospect, maybe should have consulted with the old lawyers on that one. But anyway, Gimme Shelter is really good.
You know, Men Without Hats went on to have at least one more hit. They were not destined for the kind of fame that the Rolling Stones experienced, nor the longevity. But they did have another big hit in 1987 with that song, Pop Goes the World, which it's very like techno pop with lots of beeps and boops. They did a rock album in 2010. Which interestingly was produced by Dave Ogilvy of Skinny Puppy, and it received favorable reviews. And lately, they've been doing all those 1980s themed tours with people like Howard Jones and Andy Bell from Erasure and Berlin. And they get around in those 80s nostalgia tours.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing them.
Yeah, totally. I wouldn't mind seeing a whole 80s nostalgia tour for crying out loud. I confess, when I'm not focused with laser precision on the topic, I am likely to mix them up with Men at Work. Because in my mind, Men at Work are wearing safety hat, are wearing, what are they called? Like construction
hats. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then men without hats
don't have any hats.
In my mind, are removing the construction hat. Yeah. So it gets, I have a whole scene that doesn't correspond to anything.
Men without hats, their logo is, in fact, this is probably why you're thinking of it. Their logo is a man's head with like a bowler hat on and the international symbol for no over it.
Uh-huh.
And the bowler hat looks not too dissimilar from a construction helmet.
Uh-huh. But also when you see actual men at work signs, although I guess now it's people at work, it was usually like in a hard hat zone.
Yes. They have hard hats on.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm not totally demented yet.
You're not. It's very easy to conflate these things because of the international symbol for safety and the helmet / bowler hat.
Yeah.
You can be forgiven for confusing these things.
It's true. Safety symbols are a fascinating realm of design talk. And I think there's like a big question about how to label nuclear waste storage sites for future beings, whether they be human or not, for like in that many thousands of years, like what will be a thing that's meaningful to keep people away?
What means danger across millennia?
Or what means radiation? Yes, exactly. Right.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I mean, any kind of like a cross, you would think, that feels like a very natural.
An X, yeah.
An X or something.
Mm-hmm. But I did hear, though, that Fukushima in Japan, where after the tsunami, you know, they had like a nuclear plant. A
reactor meltdown.
I've read, and I haven't confirmed it, but that there were messages inscribed on the cliffs that, because it was like right on the ocean, that set from hundreds or thousands of years ago from like ancient, saying like, do not build here, like people who had like considered the danger of that area. And of course, they wouldn't have known about like nuclear power plants, but maybe a tsunami or maybe an earthquake or something else happened at some, you know, 700 years ago. And there actually were warnings not to build there, and they built a nuclear reactor or nuclear power plant there. And then it was dangerous.
I just looked at that. Scratched on the side of the cliff.
Yes.
And they were like,
yeah, that's what I picture. I mean,
but it's a nice view.
So. Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I only read it in one place. I mean, it was a credible source, but they were like, those old guys didn't, you know, they didn't have what we have today. They didn't have hard hats, for example.
What would you put on this mixtape?
I would put Men Without Work. Men at Work.
Found work. Former employees of Wendy's.
I put Land Down Under.
Uh-huh.
Right. Former employees of Wendy's. Nice. I would put synthesizer music. I would put probably Just Can't Get Enough, maybe. Or
ooh.
And maybe even some, what's the Erasure? I Tried to Discover. Is that Chains of Love?
Uh-huh. Yes, Chains of Love.
I love that song. Always I would put that on it.
One of my favorite albums. I wore that tape out, that Erasure album.
So darn good. How about you?
Yeah, I would go with the same kind of theme. And or just like new wave hits from 1982. So,
uh-huh.
Or actually, I don't know what year Video Killed the Radio Star came out, but just in the theme of like, early MTV hits.
Yeah.
I think I'd do the Buggles, Video Killed the Radio Star.
Yeah.
And then other new wave hits from 1982, we've already covered Goody Two Shoes by Adam Ant.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wild Voodoo's Mexican Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine all three of these.
These are 82 specifically?
Yeah, they're all 82.
Huh.
Good year for new wave, right?
Right.
Or Human League, Don't You Want Me?
Oh my gosh, totally.
I think I'd throw on there. I also had a Men at Work song, but I chose Who Can It Be Now?
Hmm.
Also, just because I love this song, Like, if I had a band, I would perform this. Romeo Void's Never Say Never. It's so good.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know that song?
Mm-mm.
I bet you do.
Sing it for me.
Well, I don't know how most of it goes, but the chorus is never say never.
Okay. Is that from 1982 also?
No. Just okay. Goody Two Shoes and Mexican Radio. 1982. Yeah. I don't know about the rest of them.
Goody Two Shoes is in that same vein of, you know, like culture wars, you know, against moralizing. That fits the content.
Yes, the
too.
Child ballads and stuff. I mean, yeah. That's all the Morris dancers, British folk revival was that famous album of that guy doing the child ballads that you talked about in our Goody Two Shoes episode.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's what was happening around this time. And it's probably why this idea for the creative treatment of this video came to their minds.
Yeah. That aesthetic for me is forever linked to The Wicker Man, the horror movie, and that Midsommar, which you so helpfully told me about.
Uh-huh. It picks up on that really, too. Doesn't leave your mind, does it? Even though you didn't really like it, I don't think it sticks with you.
I think I did. I mean, I think I appreciate it. I don't know if I liked the experience.
If you were like, hey,
watching
let's
it per se
Midsommar again.
Right. No, but I thought it was quite good. Like in terms of, anyway, I guess maypoles are just fucking scary.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's some weirdness to them. I mean, I don't know. It's isn't it about like fertility? So it goes way, way back. Am I right?
I mean, I think so. And like, and also harvests, you know, not just human fertility, but like harvests and the earth and, you know, abundance.
Well, here's what the Wikipedia says. Maypoles were erected as signs that the happy season of warmth and comfort had returned.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And murder.
And murder.
Huh. Well, I loved thinking about that song, and I'm going to have to listen to it a few more times here. And
watch
always
the video.
Love. Yeah. I also always love people who must dance and cannot be told not to.
Don't tell me not to dance.
Yeah.
You know,
gosh.
Whether it's pogo dancing, dirty dancing.
I mean,
whatever.
We could include Kenny Loggins' Footloose on that next tape, too,
Footloose,
for that reason.
We've hit all of them just in the course of natural conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So go listen to Safety Dance, everybody. Mm-hmm. And you give it a thumbs up? I give it a thumbs up.
Oh, 100p. Why are people so against dancing? That's my question. That's been the theme of this show.
But I think we touched on some of it. It's because it can, you know, lead to violence, sex. Historically, like, that's what dancing was for, right? Like, fertility dances or
I guess
war
so.
Dances.
Yeah.
Or we hope we have a good harvest dances.
Yeah.
Those are all things that have to do with life.
Yeah. And that have to be controlled, I guess.
Yeah. You got to control life if you're going to be the one in power. And that's the moral of the story. Anti-establishment. That's what we're for here. Us and Ivan Doroshuk. We're on board with what old Ivan is selling. Well, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to go. What did I say I was going to do tonight? You gave me a great idea, and now I don't remember what it was.
Insert the words of Rocky Raccoon into the tune of The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Thank you. And then I'm going to watch Gimme Shelter. So I've got my dance card is full.
Chock full. And I have a lot to listen to also.
Yeah. Go get on top of it. I'll send I'll send you a playlist. I'll put it on our Spotify channel. You can listen to it there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. It's been good talking.
Same as always.
Bye.
Bye. Well, we did it.
We burned another song, and we hope you enjoyed it and danced around the fire. If you want to suggest a song or join our conversation, find us on Instagram. We are at SickBurnsPod, on Twitter at Sick80s, or on Facebook as SickBurns. And we'd love to get an email from you. Send it to us at burningthe80s@gmail.com. And if you haven't yet gotten the message that we're desperate to interact with you, but in a totally cool and standoffish way, maybe this will do it. We also have a website, and you should definitely use it. Visit sickburnspodcast.com to leave a comment or a voicemail. Ciao for now.